Morikawa wins the Open, the Mannings are coming to Monday Night Football, and the Milwaukee Bucks are the NBA Finals champions. Let's break it all down. The Valley Sports Talk begins right now. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the LaValle Sports Talk Podcast, brought to you by the Soundland Network. As always, I'm your host, Chris LaValle. Hope you all are doing well and staying safe. Colin Morikawa is the Open champion. Morikawa won the Open shooting a 4-under on Sunday and a 15-under overall for the tournament. This is his second career major and fifth PGA Tour victory in his very young career. With his victory, Morikawa becomes the first golfer in history to win two majors in their debut. He also won the 2020 PGA Championship last year. Morikawa won by 2 strokes over second-place finisher Jordan Spieth, who finished at 13-under. This win jumped Morikawa up the world golf rankings to number 3 in the world behind Jon Rahm and Dustin Johnson, respectively. Morikawa won this tournament with his beautiful iron play and clutch putting. In fact, Morikawa was the best putter out there for the week. And the 24-year-old sensation is going to be in the thick of it for many years to come. Morikawa was incredible. He was absolutely incredible. He came around late Friday, and then Saturday he was hanging around. And, you know, he overtook Louis Oosthuizen on Sunday. He was in the final pairing with Louis, and he had this commanding presence. He didn't really have a commanding lead early on, but he had this commanding presence on Sunday. And nothing rattles this kid. He is special. He is so special, and there's just something about him that he doesn't get rattled. He's got this calm presence about him that's just incredible. And he's one of the young golfers that is so important to keeping golf relevant. I've talked about it before. There is never going to be another Tiger Woods. So all of these younger golfers really need to keep winning, and it's got to be more frequent. You can't just have these sporadic major winners. You've got Koepka, who's a 4-time major winner. You have Spieth, who's a 3-time major winner. Rory has won 4 majors in his career. DeChambeau's got 1. Justin Thomas has 1. You know, so these guys have kind of got it. Rahm's got 1. So you have these younger players, these young star players that need to keep winning, and they need to make it more consistent. And I think Xander Schauffele's on the verge of breaking through. I'm still rooting for Ricky Fowler. I just don't know if that's ever going to happen for him. But again, we're really starting to see this core, this young core that's going to carry golf into the next decade or so. And Morikawa may be the leader of the pack right now. Again, the kid's won his first two introductions to both the PGA Championship and the Open, and he's won majors in both. So he is a young sensation, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch him moving forward. All right, so let's break down the rest of the tournament here, or major, I should say. Spieth shot a 4-under on Sunday. He missed some key putts, especially on Saturday. He bogeyed 17 and 18, which I believe cost him the tournament in general, or the major in general. He would have been in the final pairing with Morikawa had he made those putts. And then Sunday, he also had some costly putts as well, and he came up short on another major. But look, Spieth is what we've seen Spieth work through. I mean, he caught fire early on in his career. Again, he won 3 majors in a very short amount of time. He hasn't won any since. It's been quite a few years. He's really had to rebuild his game. He had to find his swing again. It's been a tough process for Spieth. But I think he's finally putting the pieces back together, and he's on the verge. I think next year there's a really good shot that we'll see him break through again and finally win another major. Jon Rahm also shot 4-under on Sunday and finished tied for 3rd at 11-under. Rahm tied with Louis Oosthuizen, who I mentioned before, who was in the final pairing with Morikawa, who was leading wire-to-wire until about midway through the front 9 on Sunday. And once again, Oosthuizen collapses on another Sunday and wasn't able to maintain his lead. Again, this dude's the bridesmaid, never the bride. Koepka shot a 5-under on Sunday and finished the major shooting 8-under and tied for 6th. So another top 10 finish for Koepka in a major. The dude is just a machine. Dustin Johnson shot 3-under on Sunday, 7-under for the weekend, and he was tied for 8th. My pick to win the tournament, Xander Schauffele, shot a 5-under on Sunday and tied for 26th, shooting 3-under for the tournament. And Bryson DeChambeau finished tied for 33rd and shot 2-under for the weekend. DeChambeau had a nice weekend full of controversy because for whatever reason, he just can't keep his mouth shut. So yeah, it was an exciting weekend. It was actually a much better tournament than I thought it was going to be. The weather was incredible. You know, I spent last week talking about how the Open is probably my least favorite. Actually, no, not probably. Is my least favorite major. A lot of it has to do with how crappy the weather usually is over there. But it looked like Scottsdale, Arizona. It was beautiful over there. So it was a fun tournament to watch. I'm kind of bummed out. There's no more majors for the rest of the season. Just gotta sit back and wait until April for the Masters. All right, so we got a two-part NFL segment. First part, I want to talk about the breaking news. It's off-the-field stuff. And then the second part will be more on-the-field things concerning players. All right, huge news here. Peyton and Eli Manning are going to host Monday Night Football on ESPN2. The Mannings will do an alternate telecast during Monday Night Football on ESPN2. It's been signed on for 10 games a season over the next three seasons. And they will do, again, this show will be on ESPN2 with a yet-to-be-named host. They'll probably get somebody like Ryan Rucco. Maybe they could get Greenberg to do it. I don't know. Somebody that in that type of vein will more than likely be the studio host. From the business standpoint, this is a massive win for ESPN, who is desperate for some positive press right now. Like they're bleeding. Let's be real. They're bleeding as a company. This is a huge win for them. The company will be making a ton of money from this. They're going to promote the hell out of this show. And they're going to be compensated handsomely because of it. You have Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning is the draw. Think about the amount of networks that have been tripping over themselves trying to get Peyton. Aside from CBS, who has Tony Romo. Okay, so once CBS got Romo, CBS is set. But NBC, Fox, and ESPN have been desperate to try and find a way to get Peyton Manning in a booth. And while he's not technically in a booth, he's going to be in a studio. The fact that ESPN has been able to get Peyton is massive for them. Now, here's my prediction. This show is going to do better numbers than the actual Monday Night Football telecast. That's my prediction, is that by the end of the season, when they look back at the numbers, more people are going to be tuning in to listen to Peyton talk and Eli say a few words as well than they are going to be tuning into the actual game itself to listen to Lewis Riddick, Brian Griese, and Steve Levy. Which brings me to this other aspect where I think ESPN has created an internal competition for its own crew, which could end up being a problem. And I think this is a really, really tough pill to swallow if you're Lewis Riddick and you're Brian Griese. Because Peyton Manning has now entered the building. Peyton Manning is now in the wings. If Peyton does this show, let's say for a year or even 2 years, and he kind of sits back and goes, you know what? Kind of want to be in the Monday Night Football booth. If you don't think ESPN will move on from Riddick and Brian Griese in breakneck pace, then I don't know what to tell you. They will move heaven and earth to put Peyton Manning in that Monday Night Football booth because he will be ratings gold for them. And I think that's what this is. This is almost like, hey man, let's give you a show. Let's see how you like it, with the hopes that he's going to enjoy doing it and he'll want to just move right into the booth in a couple of years. I truly believe that that's the whole point of this, is ESPN is hoping to be able to draw Peyton out of the studio show after a couple of years and stick him right in the booth. And it's a brilliant idea, and I think that it could work. But at the end of the day, I think that that show with Peyton and Eli is going to dwarf the numbers of people actually tuning into ESPN to watch the game. Because Peyton Manning is entertainment. Listening to Lewis Riddick, and I love Lewis Riddick, I do. I think he's one of the smartest football analysts out there. Brian Griese's okay. Steve Levy's okay. But if you have the opportunity to listen to Peyton, or you want to listen to those three guys, I'm going to take Peyton Manning. That's like saying, do you want to listen to, I don't even know. I mean, I like Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, but it's like, do you want to listen to Joe Buck or Troy Aikman, or do you want to listen to Tony Romo? You're going to take Tony Romo 10 times out of 10. Same thing here with Peyton. You can listen to Peyton talk football, or you can listen to these three guys who know their shit, but they're not Peyton Manning. So at the end of the day, brilliant move by ESPN, but I do think that they've created somewhat of an internal conflict for the company, especially if the numbers go the way that I think they're going to. All right, so for part two, let's actually get to some on-the-field stuff here. The Rams 2020 second round pick running back Cam Akers tore his Achilles tendon while training ahead of training camp. And this is a catastrophic and brutal loss for the Rams. I and many others believed that the Rams were Super Bowl contenders this season. This really hurts their chances. Now, I'm not saying that the Rams can't make the Super Bowl. That's not what I'm saying. But I am telling you that I'm pumping the brakes a little bit on my way, way, way too early prediction when I made it back when they picked up Matthew Stafford. I immediately said, ooh, they got Stafford now. Rams could possibly win the Super Bowl. Now I'm kind of sitting back and going, I don't know. They're going to have to look at free agency. They're going to have to see what running backs are available. Ironically enough, Todd Gurley is available, but given the relationship that both he and the organization had when they finally let him go, I don't know if they're going to want to try and mend those fences, and Gurley may not want to go back there, but they are definitely going to have to look for some help at running back. And it sucks too, because this kid, a lot of people, and again, including myself, were thinking he was going to have a breakout year. Dude's a stud, absolute stud. What he did at the latter half of last season, he was incredible. And this is definitely a brutal loss for a contender leading up until this point in time. The other part I want to talk about, and this is actually huge news, and I know a lot of people may be like rolling their eyes already because I'm going to talk Aaron Rodgers again on this podcast, but this I thought was very interesting. So it was reported from ESPN, Aaron Rodgers turned down an offer from the Packers. This happened a few months ago. That would have made him the NFL's highest paid quarterback. According to reports, Green Bay offered him a 2-year extension worth more than $45 million a year. And this would be a massive raise to his $21.5 million salary that he is owed this season. So this whole dispute between Rodgers and the Packers is clearly not about money. You can say what you want about Rodgers, you can say what you want about the Packers, but what this shows is that Rodgers isn't interested in the money. So it's not for him, for a lot of people, they've always made the comparison between, you know, Rodgers and Brady when it's come to like the money aspect of how Rodgers has always gotten paid. Brady never did up until obviously when he went to the Bucks and he signed a 2-year $15 million contract, which again has already been worth its weight in gold given the fact that they just won a Super Bowl. But this is not about money for Rodgers. But it makes you wonder if the Packers are so desperate to keep Rodgers, willing to pay him $45 million a year, which is insane. Absolutely insane. I'm sorry, Rodgers is not worth $45 million a year. Why the hell did you draft Jordan Love in the first place? If you're so desperate to keep him, last time I checked, you took Jordan Love in the first round a couple years ago. He's supposed to be the heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers. If Rodgers doesn't want to stay with you, but you're so desperate to keep him and you're willing to pay him an insane salary to do that, I think the Packers know that they screwed up by drafting Love. And not so much because of Rodgers' reaction to it, because I don't think that that has anything to do with it. I think they would be totally fine with Rodgers' reaction if Jordan Love was actually worth a first-round draft pick. I don't think the Packers like what they've seen in practice with him. I don't think that Jordan Love is going to be a good NFL quarterback. And now I've said this for a while. I said the reason why the Packers are so desperate to keep Rodgers is because they don't want to show what Jordan Love can't do. This isn't as much as people are trying to make comparisons to Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, Love is not Rodgers. He's not that talented. He wasn't that talented coming out of college. Aaron Rodgers, for those who forget, was a potential first overall pick in that NFL draft. Now, the 49ers picked Alex Smith, but that was a big deal. A lot of people, a lot of draft analysis had Rodgers either going one or in the top five, and he plummeted in that first round. Like, there's a reason why Rodgers has such a grudge. It's because he was projected to be one of the top five players in that draft. Jordan Love, there was nothing coming out of that draft that gave any indication that Jordan Love would be an NFL great. Nothing. So I really do think the Packers bit off way more than they can chew, and now they're sweating. Because even if Rodgers because they're clear. I don't think they're going to deal Rodgers. So Rodgers has two options. He can either play this season or he can sit out. And I think the Packers are freaking out that Rodgers may actually decide to sit out. I do believe that. Now, do I think Rodgers is insane to sit out? Absolutely. I think he's. I think if he sits out, it's going to completely change my perspective on him as a competitor. I will completely flip the script. Now, I will respect him for having the courage of his convictions and actually putting his money where his mouth is. I will 100% respect him on that end. But as far as being a competitor and being a champion and trying to win another Super Bowl, I will definitely take a hard step back on that one. And I do. I think the Packers are shaking in their boots because if they have to put Jordan Love out there, I don't think the Packers win five games. I think Jordan Love is that bad. Now, again, you don't have to like Aaron Rodgers or the way he's handling things. And I know many of you out there who listen to this podcast, I hear from you all the time, you're not a fan of his. But I think you have to acknowledge, given all of the information that has been trickling out over time, the Packers screwed up on this. And it's going to cost them one way or another. Again, you don't have to like Aaron Rodgers, and I get that. I know a lot of you don't. You don't even have to like the way that he's been handling things. And like I said, I'm not 100% a fan of everything he's done this offseason. But you can't deny the fact that this is going to bite the Packers. One way or another, this is going to bite the Packers. And it might not bite them this year because Rodgers is still under contract. And I do think he's going to play. But next season, they have to start Jordan Love next season because this is where they're screwed. If they don't start Jordan Love next season and they go out and they go get another quarterback, either way, the Packers are in trouble because they can either start Jordan Love or they can go out and go draft another quarterback or go find another veteran quarterback once Rodgers leaves. But already, that's going to prove Rodgers right for being pissed off. And it's going to prove all of us out here who have been saying from day one, why the hell would you waste a draft pick on Jordan Love? Jordan Love isn't even going to be that good. If you're going to draft Aaron Rodgers' replacement, at least waste it or wait till the second or the third round to take Jordan Love because that's where Jordan Love belonged. It's the same conversation I had with the Eagles with Jalen Hurts. The Eagles fans don't realize how good they had it with Carson Wentz, and they're going to realize it real quick when Jalen Hurts and the Eagles only win like three games this season. You know, the grass is always greener for a lot of people. But I think Packers fans realize how great they had it with Aaron Rodgers. And don't get me wrong, I believe that this leak, that this whole contract thing was leaked by the Packers. They wanted this to get out there to try and make a play at the fans and say, hey, look, we're willing to throw as much money at Rodgers as he wants. He just doesn't want to be here. Trying to pit the fans against Rodgers. And I think some fans will be rightfully pissed off that Rodgers doesn't want to stay in Green Bay. But at the same time, there's going to be a lot of fans who are going to at least look at it full circle and say, yeah, I'm pissed off that he doesn't want to be here anymore. But you guys also drafted his replacement in the first round a couple years ago when you could have taken a wide receiver or a tight end or just some sort of skill player to help us win games. And instead you chose to draft his replacement, and his replacement isn't any good. So Packers fans are going to be rightfully pissed off. Some will. Some will stick, obviously, by the organization, but there are going to be a lot that are going to be pissed off with the fact that their organization allowed one of the best quarterbacks of all time to get pissed off enough with the organization to want out. And, you know, I do. I think a fire is going to be lit under the Packers, and rightfully so. I think the organization, I've said it before and I'll say it again, the organization deserves whatever they get from this because Jordan Love was never the answer. And sooner or later, the Packers are going to have to live with their decisions. So when everything is stupid this week, I want to talk about the Stephen A. Smith controversy. Now, Austin Space and I go into depth about this on episode 9 of Spaceball, which is currently available wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Again, check that out. It's a great episode. So I'm not going to reiterate what I already said to Austin and obviously what Austin said to me. You can download it and check it out, and you'll get my full opinion on the whole thing. What I really want to touch on right now, though, is the fact that there's no nuance anymore in any type of discourse, whether it's obviously social media is not the best place for nuance, but there's no room to actually have a conversation anymore. It's everyone, and we've talked about this before on this podcast, but and on Rich and Lala and on Drinks with Dan, like we've had these type of conversation before about how everyone is just so interested in parsing what you say and trying to find a way to become offended or try and create some sort of victimhood type narrative to break it down. And Stephen A. Smith is a beautiful target to do that with. You know, there's a lot of people who were out there who were actually pumped that Stephen A. Smith was getting torn down. People who are more on the conservative side of the window, because they were sitting there going, saying, well, look, you know, Stephen A.'s got no problem having racial conversations and trying to virtue signal on certain aspects. And now chickens are coming home to roost for him. Now he's getting it. And I completely appreciate that side of the argument. And I get what you're saying. But if you want to get rid of cancel culture, you have to get rid of cancel culture regardless of who's getting crushed on social media. Like, it doesn't matter if you used to or you don't agree with them 9 times out of 10, but now you're seeing them get destroyed and you're sitting back and you're clapping and you're laughing and going, ha, 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 well, this is what you get. Cancel culture is cancel culture. I talked about it with Rachel Nichols. I am not a fan of Rachel Nichols. I was kind of sitting back a little bit and I was smiling and I was going, well, you know, she's somebody who had no problem trying to show her virtue back in the day. And now all of a sudden her chickens are coming home to roost and I'm kind of enjoying it a little bit. But as I've reflected over it over the past couple of weeks, I've kind of sat back and went, well, that's really hypocritical of me because I don't want to see anybody get canceled. I don't believe in cancel culture. I think cancel culture is fucking stupid. Think about it with Chrissy Teigen. Chrissy Teigen was somebody who had no problem trying to destroy people's livelihoods and people's careers. And then all that stuff unearthed about how much of a nasty human being she is. And people came to her. And she's been hiding and cowering in fear over the last couple months because of it. Again, you can be pumped about the fact that she was somebody who deep down was really a terrible human being. And all of this type of comeuppance is justified. But it's still not something that should be celebrated. We need to find a way to go back to having actual conversations. And while social media has been great in a lot of aspects, it has also completely eliminated the fact that we don't know how to have a conversation with each other anymore. We don't know how to debate. We don't know how to even take criticism. You take somebody tweets out or tweets at you and disagrees with you, and immediately it turns into like a Twitter Royale battle. And a lot of it is because when people criticize somebody, they don't just criticize them, they take pot shots. And it's, again, that whole keyboard warrior mentality where I have no idea who at the Tree 95 is. So I can just call this person a racist or a bigot or a jackass or whatever it may be. And I'm never actually going to meet that person or meet that individual in person. So there's really going to be no repercussions for what I say to them. I'm not going to get punched in the face. I'm not going to get verbally, you know, we're not going to have some sort of verbal altercation. So I can sit back here in the comfort of my own home, sitting on my couch, and I can just try and attack this person or ruin this person's day because I have autonomy sitting here on my phone. And that's a problem. It is. It's a problem. Bill Burr used to have a skit where he would talk about how, you know, one of the best things about growing up and being a guy and kind of getting into altercations is that, you know, every once in a while you kind of got to get punched in the face. You got to get decked in the mouth a little bit and get the cobwebs, you know, loosened up a little bit because, you know, sometimes you deserve to get blasted in the face. And we've lost that. No one ever actually gets blasted in the face anymore. No one gets their comeuppance. Everyone kind of just sits back and feels very powerful because there's no consequences to the actions. At worst, you'll get a Twitter suspension or a Facebook suspension for like a day, which means you can't tweet or you can't post on Facebook for like a day, unless you're a repeat violator. But then you get banned, and then you can just turn around and create a new account under a different email address anyway. you're not a big enough fish for them to actually care, unless you're a celebrity. But even still, if you're not that big of a fish where they're actually going to be monitoring you and the individual specifically, unless, you know, you're linked to some sort of like terrorist group or something. But outside of that, you know, you can just find a new way to get back onto social media. So really, the point that I'm making, though, in the big scheme of things is that, and Matt and I talked about this on Richo and Lala, I don't know, a few weeks ago. We talked about how no one knows how to have a conversation with each other anymore. We don't even know how to debate. And that's so sad. Like, you can dislike what Stephen A. Smith said, and you can think that what Stephen A. Smith said was inartful or stupid or ignorant or whatever it may be. But that doesn't mean that Stephen A. Smith should be canceled. And the people out there who are trying to cancel him, or try to try and disparage him every possible way, they weren't doing it because they actually care about what he said. They saw an opportunity, and an opportunity to try and build on their resume. I can take down Stephen A. Smith. I can make a name for myself. I'm a blue check mark, but I'm not a big enough blue check mark. So now I can take down the big bad Stephen A. Smith. Stephen A. Smith is a target. He is the biggest sports reporter or sports analyst in the world, bar none. I don't know of another person who is that much of a household name. Like, you talk to most people in this country and you mention the name Stephen A. Smith, unless they don't watch sports, they know who Stephen A. Smith is. Like, he's that well known. There are very, very few sports people out there that are this popular. So Stephen A. is a massive target. And so he gave a lot of people an opportunity to take pot shots at him, and everybody did it. But the fact, though, that people were taking these pot shots, like, if you actually sat back and you really listened to what Stephen A. Smith said, do you really think that Stephen A. Smith is a racist? Do you really think that Stephen A. Smith was trying to be disparaging? Again, I talked about this on Spaceball, so I'm not trying to reiterate what I've already said, but just think about it. Think about it. I'm not trying to do a gotcha or trying to, I'm really not trying to preach to you here or preach at you. I'm just saying, like, go back and listen to what he said and take your virtue signaling, whatever, off, like blinders off for like 5 seconds, and just listen to what he said. And if you still walk away and you still think what he said is racist or completely unjustified, fine. Then that's how you feel. But I think if you kind of peel back the layers a little bit and you really hear what Stephen A. Smith said, you're going to come away from it and you're going to go, okay, well, what he said was inartful, but he actually made a valid point. And I think that's at the crux of where we are here. Like, this is the splitting point in our society of, sometimes people say stupid shit. You're on live television or you're on the radio or whatever it may be. You have a hot mic on somewhere and you say something stupid, but that doesn't mean that what you said isn't A, factual, or B, meant to be hurtful. It just, the way that it came out. Think about Rachel Nichols. What Rachel Nichols said about Maria Taylor may have been inartful, but what she said, by and large, was not incorrect. Again, you don't have to like how she said it, but you can't just sit there and immediately say, oh, Rachel Nichols is clearly a racist because of what she said. Because she's obviously not a racist. We all know this. Just like you know Stephen A. Smith is not a racist. We all know this. We have to stop being so damn hyper-focused on trying to find the next person to cancel and actually listen to what people are saying. Listen to the meaning behind what they're saying. If they're an evil, hateful person, you're going to know from the jump that they're not a good person. But if they've never once given you a reason to think that they're evil or mean-spirited or nasty, and they say something stupid, what happened to a little bit of grace? What happened to a little bit of forgiveness? What happened to actually having a conversation and saying, hey, hold on a second. You just said this, this, and this. Is that really what you mean? Give them an opportunity. Call them out on it and say, hey, man, like, you said this. That doesn't sound right. And give them a chance to kind of reflect for a second and go, oh, shit. Yeah, okay, I get what you're saying. That's not what I meant. What I meant was this. I did not mean for it to come out this way. Give people the opportunity to fix their mistakes. Again, it all comes back to a dialogue. Have a conversation. Talk it out. Stop trying to find new ways to hate each other. Like, we have enough issues in this world. We don't need to keep trying to find new ways to just destroy other people's livelihoods and careers. We're better than that, or at least I'd like to believe that us as a society is better than that. The Bucks are your NBA Finals champions, and it was a tremendous game by Giannis Antetokounmpo to close out this series. So I'm going to try and do this as quickly as possible. I don't want to make this last word segment super long. I'm going to do a very condensed Game 6 analysis with what this means for Giannis' legacy, what this means for Chris Paul's legacy. And then Matt's going to come on either this podcast or Rich and Lala, and we'll do more of an in-depth NBA-style discussion of these finals, of what this means for everyone's legacy, and what this, you know, what we could see in this offseason, and what this means for the future of the NBA. Because Giannis winning in Milwaukee without another superstar along with him, I think is huge for the NBA. And it could mean something for the future. But again, that's a conversation for another day. So let's get into game six here. So game six, 105-98, the Bucks took down the Suns in, again, a spectacular performance by Giannis. So let's talk about the Bucks first, then we'll talk about the Suns. And like I said, I'll break down Giannis's legacy, or what this means for Giannis's legacy, or what this means for Chris Paul. So Giannis scored 50 points in arguably the greatest closeout NBA Finals game we've ever seen. You put it up there with what Jordan did, what Magic Johnson did, what Bob Pettit did. It's just, he's in a very exclusive list now. 50 points, 16 of 25 from the field, 7 of 19 from the free throw line, 1 of 3 from 3. He had 14 rebounds, 5 blocks, 2 assists. Middleton was okay, wasn't sensational, wasn't spectacular by any means, but he did put up 17 points. He had a clutch shot near the end of the game that all but sealed the deal for the Bucks. The Suns were streaking a little bit. They were trying to get back into the game, and they went on a bit of a run, and then Middleton hit this incredible shot, best shot of his career, with a hand all up in his face, and he just hit a fadeaway shot. It worked, and that I think was the pretty much the nail in the coffin for the Phoenix Suns. Holiday had 12 points. Shot 4 of 19 from the field, 2 of 7 from 3. Again, another relatively anemic performance for Holiday. Look, Holiday did what he needed to do on defense. So, you know, while he only had one really spectacular offensive output in Game 5, his defense on Chris Paul was absolutely incredible. So, Holiday did what he needed to do. And, again, I can't say enough about Giannis, but before I get into the legacy conversation with Giannis, let's talk about the Suns' performance here real quick. Devin Booker was awful, absolutely awful. This was his worst game of the series. He shot 8 of 22. He was 0 of 7 from 3. He had a total of 19 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds, and 6 turnovers. This was easily his worst game of the finals. This might have been his worst game of the playoffs. He just had a terrible, terrible game. DeAndre Ayton couldn't do anything. He had 12 points and 6 rebounds. He just 4 of 12 from the field. Giannis abused him all series. As the series progressed, Giannis just took advantage of Ayton's inexperience and just torched him. And then that brings me to Chris Paul. Chris Paul had a relatively good game compared to the last few games that he had had. He scored 26 points, 5 assists, 1 steal, 2 rebounds. He shot 11 of 19 from the field, 3 of 4 from the free throw line, 1 of 2 from 3. Look, I mean, the Suns just, they got beat by the better team. They got beat by the better team. They got beat by the best player in the NBA. Plain and simple. You know, there's a lot you can say. You know, you could be like, oh, you know, they choked. They were up 2-0. Yeah, they were. They were up 2-0. And should they have won the finals? Well, obviously, I picked them to win the finals. I thought that them being up 2-0 all but sealed the deal. But give the Bucks credit. You got to give Coach Budenholzer credit, as much as I don't want to. As much as I thought he should have been fired by the end of the season, even if the Bucks won the championship, I was saying I thought that Budenholzer should be fired. But he made the necessary defensive adjustments that he needed to make. And after game one, Chris Paul never had a great game. I mean, look, he had a good game in game six, but after he made the adjustments that he needed to make, the only reason why the Suns won game two was because they made like 23s. I mean, it was an anomaly what they did in game two. So, again, the Suns lost to the better team. They lost to the best player in the NBA. And the Milwaukee Bucks are absolutely deserved NBA champions. All right, let's talk legacies. Chris Paul's legacy wasn't enhanced, also wasn't hurt by this NBA Finals performance. He's going to go down as one of the greatest players to never win a championship. He's in the Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing, Dan Marino type of conversation, where if you're just looking at the pantheon of sports greats, that's where Chris Paul is going to be, because I do think this was Chris Paul's best chance, unless he makes some decision and then there's some sort of thing where he goes to the Lakers or something like that. But outside of that, I think this was it for Paul and his opportunity to win the finals. All the people out there that are trashing him, that are just torching him on social media, shut up, man. Like, just stop. Okay. You didn't like Chris Paul to begin with. This has now confirmed your bias going in, and you're gloating, which is fine. That's every right to do it. I'm not a Chris Paul fan by any means, but I also don't think that you can sit back and go, oh, well, this performance completely, you know, crushes Chris Paul's in the legacy conversation. Because I honestly believe Chris Paul is playing with house money. If he won the finals MVP, he was only going to go up as far as like the legacy rankings go. If he lost, well, you can't drop him. You can't be now say, oh, well, he's even worse of an NBA player than I thought, because he took a non-playoff team not only to the playoffs, but carried them to the NBA Finals. Now, Devin Booker carried them during the NBA Finals, but Chris Paul got them there. Without Chris Paul, the Suns are not in the finals today. They weren't in the finals this season. It never would have happened without Paul. Paul completely changed the team chemistry. He made DeAndre Ayton into a star. He solidified Devin Booker as an NBA star. And he did it all. Chris Paul was an MVP conversation, and he should have been, for what he did this season. So, as far as the legacy things go for him, I think the only thing that this solidified, in my opinion, is that you can't compare him with Isaiah Thomas anymore. Because that seemed to be like an interesting, and maybe it was just a social media thing or a sports talk debate thing, but I saw a lot of people entering into this NBA Finals of, oh, well, if Paul wins the finals, he's now in the conversation ahead of Isaiah Thomas. I don't think you can put him there. I don't think you can put him there. Mainly because, regardless of if he was injured or not, and again, we don't know yet, but Isaiah Thomas would have come up much bigger in Game 4 and Game 5. Paul didn't come up in Game 4 or Game 5. He was anemic in those games. Terrible. Absolutely terrible. Maybe he was injured. Maybe he wasn't. But I don't think you can have a conversation anymore about trying to put him in the same breath as Magic Johnson, as Isaiah Thomas. He's just not in that category. He's an elite point guard. But I also don't think you can call him, and Matt completely disagrees with me on this, but he calls him a point god. I don't think you can call him that. You can't call somebody a god unless they actually have a championship to back that up. And Chris Paul doesn't. Again, we can have a much longer debate about why he doesn't have a championship, but he doesn't. So if you don't have a ring, I'm not going to call you a god. Now let's talk Giannis. Giannis's performance, 50 points in a closeout game, puts him in elite company. Just, it does. As far as where he stands as an all-time great, I don't know, I think he's in the top 25. Maybe he's even in the top 20 now. I don't know. I would actually have to sit down and really look into it. But he solidified himself in basketball lore. I mean, people were talking about how the performance that he just put on in the NBA Finals is similar to what we saw in peak Shaq form with the Lakers. I mean, that's insane that Giannis put on a performance so damn good that it's comparable to Shaq. Shaq is the most dominant NBA player we've ever seen. Not greatest, but the most dominant player for a stretch. Those late 90s, mid 2000s Shaquille O'Neal performances were, you couldn't stop the guy. I mean, they created the Shaq rules in order to try and stop him. Because you just couldn't. The dude was just a machine. So the fact that Giannis is in that conversation is incredible. He's a two-time MVP, a finals MVP. You know, he is right now, for my money, the best player in basketball. He's one notch above Kevin Durant. I think Kevin Durant, like if I was going to draft a basketball team, I would probably take Kevin Durant over Giannis. But Giannis is holding the chip. He's now the reigning finals MVP. He's the reigning NBA champion. Therefore, that puts him ahead of Kevin Durant. And then let's talk about real quick about what this finals means for his legacy in a sense of what he did. The fact that he stayed in Milwaukee and didn't go run off to go join Luka in Dallas or Dame in Portland or go to New York and try and team up with another superstar out with the Knicks or something like that. He stayed in Milwaukee with the team that drafted him. Didn't play with another superstar. Chris Middleton is not a superstar. He is a all-star, but he's not. Maybe he's in the top 15 now. You could put him in the top 15 conversation. He sure as hell isn't a top 10 player. So Giannis did this without another top 10 player with him. Think about all of the other guys who have run off to go join other teams or to join other superstar players in order to win a championship. LeBron's only won championships with other superstar players around him. Kevin Durant ran off to Golden State. I think the only other player that I can think of in the last decade plus that didn't run off to try and join another superstar squad in order to not just make it to the finals but win an NBA finals is Dirk Nowitzki when he stayed in Dallas. And Dallas upset the Miami Heat a few years back when that was the first year of the Wade, Bosh, and LeBron James led Miami Heat. Nowitzki was the only top 10 player on that team. He was surrounded by a bunch of old dudes. You had Jason Terry. You had a very, very old Jason Kidd. Tyson Chandler on that team. Like it was all Dirk Nowitzki, which is similar to what we're seeing here with Milwaukee. It was all Giannis. There is no other superstar. And that also brings me to this, just this real thing. And it has nothing to do with Giannis's legacy. Is there another athlete in sports that is easier to root for than Giannis? Because I don't think so. I don't think there's another superstar, except for maybe Steph Curry, back, not now, obviously, because Steph's won, but I think people really fell in love with Steph back in the mid, what was it, 2013, 2014, 2015, like that time period. I think people really fell in love with Steph, and he was pretty easy to root for. He was just very likable. But I can't think of another star right now in all of sports that's easier to root for than Giannis. He's just a genuine guy, a genuinely good human being, both on the court and off the court. You hear it in his press conferences. He just gets it. And he's not all about himself. He's about his teammates. He's about praising his teammates. He praises his family every opportunity he gets, is thankful for the opportunity he has to not only play basketball, but to just do what he loves for a living. And it's really an awesome story, what he's overcome in his life to be where he is and to succeed at the highest level. Giannis is just a great story. He's just an awesome, awesome human being. So again, as far as the legacy component goes, I don't think you can drop Chris Paul. I don't. And if you are, then it's just because you're a Chris Paul hater. But I do think, as far as on the positive end, this is huge for Giannis. Like, this solidifies him, again, pantheon of NBA greats. He's the best player in basketball right now. And all the doubt, all the people out there who doubted him, and look, I was one of them. So I'm one of those people that have to eat my own medicine over here. If you doubted him and you said that he couldn't do it, he proved you wrong. At the end of the day, he proved you wrong. And the congratulations to him and congratulations to the Milwaukee Bucks on one hell of a NBA season. All right, everyone, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the podcast. As always, thank you so much for tuning in and listening. I greatly appreciate it. Please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, we have plenty of other podcasts for you from the network, including Drinks with Dan, Richo's Rant, Spaceball, and Richo and Lala. And that is it. That's all I have for you this week. Be well. Stay safe. Talk to you all again soon.